Anyway, a few years later, because of experiences like this, I went to my first Buddhist class. And my first Buddhist class was a full-length metta-bhavana, full dress, 50-minute metta-bhavana, with instruction, thankfully. And then a full dress, sevenfold puja, seven stages, all the trimmings, so to speak, and with the mantras at the end of the puja. And when I chanted those mantras after the person, the order member leading it, I felt enormous relief and joy. And I felt a sense of recognition and homecoming. This was a language that I knew. This was my language. This was my sound. This was my world. I'd already encountered the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum, the famous mantra of Avalokiteshvara, but there were these other mantras that were so mysterious and wonderful. But I'd found, as it were, my language, my world. And my response to that was to plunge in as deeply as I could into the Dharma. Later on, a few years later, I was ordained into the Western Buddhist Order by Sangharakshita. And he conducted, of course, my private ordination. There are two aspects to the ordination. A private ordination where you're just with your preceptor, and then the public ordination in front of other people where you're received into the order. So in the private ordination, it was just me and Sangharakshita. And as part of the ordination ceremony, he gave me a mantra. In every ordination ceremony, a mantra is given, which represents your personal meditation practice, the meditation practice that you will be doing that's kind of personal, individual to you. And he intoned each syllable of the mantra he gave me deeply and carefully, out of great stillness and silence, and I repeated each syllable after him. And the vibrations, if you like, of these mantra syllables went very deep indeed. They went right in. And I found after the ceremony the mantra just flowing along all of its own for days, for weeks afterwards, through the day and through the night. It was in me, it was all around me, like a droning, a deep rhythmic sound, which was deeply satisfying, deeply mysterious, with a profound meaning, not a rational meaning, of course, but a much deeper meaning, which was leading me on, drawing me on, deeper into the heart of things. It was like being in contact with a rich and peaceful energy, like a great reservoir of energy, seemingly inexhaustible energy. So there were days, even weeks of this. And it's interesting that even now, that if the mantra, my mantra, begins to sound of itself silently, it's a kind of sign. It's always an indicator that I'm beginning to go deeper in my meditation, in my experience. It's a nimitta. It's a sound sign that something is opening up. So sound is extraordinarily important in my own path, my own journey. And those experiences, of course, were direct. Those sounds I heard and participated in went straight to the heart. Perhaps they went in even deeper than the heart. Perhaps they went into the inner, to the innermost, maybe. Who knows? But sound, hearing, listening has been important to me, crucial to me in other ways. I heard the Dharma, the sound of the Dharma in words, in speech, especially the words, the speech of Sangharakshita. I listened to those reel-to-reel tape lectures that Chandradasa referred to. I listened to his live lectures, some of which he was doing in those days. I went on seminars with him. In those days, there were very few Dharma books. It's not like it is now. There were very few Dharma books. It was all about listening and hearing. So I heard words expressing concepts, ideas, images, poetry, woven together, brilliantly woven together, clearly woven together, articulating a clear path, clear practices, rousing my spiritual energies an opening up directions, clarifying where I needed to go, what I needed to do. So I heard all this. Now, I'm sure my own, you know, journey into the Dharma isn't unique. I'm sure you can all resonate with my experience in some way or another. It is, in fact, I think, worth reflecting on what sense medium has the Dharma worked through on you in particular. And I'm sure you'll find that the hearing sense has been very important in that journey. The sound of the Dharma, even the sound of reality, has been important to you. Now, it's interesting to note that the early disciples of the Buddha were known as Shravakas. Shravakas. Shravaka means hearer. The word is Savaka in Pali, by the way. Shravaka means hearer, one who hears. One who hears the Dharma from the Buddha. And in the early days of Buddhism, of course, that was the only way to learn the Dharma. There were no books in the time of the Buddha, and for many centuries afterwards, it was an oral tradition. You heard, you listened, you had to. There was no other way for it to go in. And a learned man, a wise man, was known in the early Buddhist days as Bahushruta, which means one who has heard much. Not one who's read a lot, but one who has heard much. And one who's retained what he's heard. One who's internalized what he's heard. Made it his own. Made it a part of him. I think there's something very, very important here. And it seems to be a tradition that's kind of dying out, you know, with the increase of kind of technology and you know, different approaches to life that have developed. But the whole notion of learning by heart seems to be dying out. Learning by heart, the, you know, great poems, great philosophy, great religious, spiritual insight. Learning those words by heart, learning the words of great teachers by heart. If you learn them by heart, they start to become your words, your sound. That can become a constant reference point, and I think that they give you a kind of depth, a kind of ballast, which you can sort of turn to in the storms and stress of life. So I think learning by heart, making the words you hear from the great masters your words, your sound, is extraordinarily important. Even today, Buddhists continue to be Shravakas. We really do have a Shravaka Sangha, a community of hearers. We learn the Dharma through hearing, through listening, through the Dharma talk, through the study group, through talking the Dharma, listening to the Dharma with one another. And it's a live thing. It's a live thing. It's a total experience. You've got the words, you've got the being, you've got the total environment. And I think it's really important that we don't lose this. In fact, I think it needs to be strengthened more and more and more because, yes, I think these sort of oral traditions, as it were, this way of learning is kind of under threat. In India still, the Dharma talk, the Dharma discourse, the Dharma pravachan, as they call it, is still hugely popular because the oral tradition is still alive, even though it's under incredible threat from you know, the onslaught of modern technology and entertainment systems. But in India, when I've given lectures out there, and I've given many lectures in India, if I don't talk for at least 2 hours, people feel cheated. People feel, oh, you know, you talk for an hour and a half and you're almost on your knees by the end of it. And they say, oh, it was a bit short, Padmavatra. Short talk. Short talk. You know, people like to listen, like to hear. It's a whole, you know, it's a whole experience, a whole event. So this, of course, brings up this whole area of teaching and learning through words, through sound, the live existential interaction, call and response. That's a very, very beautiful notion. There's a lot in call and response. Maybe come back to that a bit later.